Welcome to another opening, another show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Brought to you from the lovely salubrious studios of the Gawler Town Hall on Kaurna Land in South Australia.
Hi Jane, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks Michael. We are your hosts.
And we've got a big musical in store for you today.
Oh yes, now as you listened to Ms. Nancy Hayes, AMOA and all the other wonderful
Every
letters,
other letter in her name as well at the end of her name.
Esteem for the people of Australia, that's what it means, all
exactly.
Those letters. She opened the door and revealed
West Side Story.
This means a lot to me, this particular musical. As some listeners may know, I grew up in a very musical-loving household. And back in the day, when you could legally buy a score of every musical and have it in your home, my parents did. So my brother and I spent lots of rainy weekends at the piano just finding out about all these musicals from their printed scores. And West Side Story is fiendishly difficult to play, so both of us were at the piano together.
How were your hands afterwards playing it?
Well, nothing compared with when Gershwin played Rhapsody in Blue and had to bandage his bloody fingers. But it was brain taxing trying to read Bernstein's marvellous music, and such a feeling of accomplishment when we did. So I particularly love West Side Story and loved it way before the first time I saw it.
Well, I love West Side Story because it reminds me of, and I'm talking about sport, Celtic versus Rangers, the rivalries.
Oh, the gangs.
The gang rivalries, right. And the football fights and everything.
Yes, well, a lot of those, some of those aforementioned clubs have an ethnic / religious bent to their prejudice against each other. That's Celtic and Rangers.
Let's get stuck into West Side Story.
Yes, let's. Listeners, that you may be, you will not necessarily know that the copyright license is cost prohibitive for us, and so we've created a Spotify playlist of all the music.
Tell us more, Jane.
Well, in a show like this, you would like to have extracts after you in the synopsis say, and they come on stage and proclaim their love for each other, and then cut to the love song. We can't do that. So, the playlist is the entire score as much as has been recorded ever, curated to show bits of the original, bits of revivals, London version, Chicago version, Australian version, if there is a recording, and sometimes some quirky odd little things like Seal singing Luck Be a Lady Tonight.
That's my favourite.
My favourite is video from Sesame Street in the 70s of Ben Vereen doing Mr. Cellophane. It's just gorgeous. Go and find it, people. It's on our socials as well. So where can they find us on social media, Michael?
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram.
And what platforms does this show emanate from?
Spotify, Castbox and YouTube.
Excellent. West Side Story, a history. This is not a brief history, but not exhaustive. There are lots of things which you will want to hunt down and look at and have lovely afternoons on websites with these tidbits that I'm about to tell you. Originally conceived in 1949, West Side Story could well have been East Side Story. Jerome Robbins, director, choreographer and original ideas man, originally intended to tell Romeo and Juliet with a Jewish girl and an Italian Catholic boy falling in love on the Lower East Side over Easter and Passover. The creative team of Robbins, Arthur Lawrence, who was a playwright and director, and composer Leonard Bernstein, worked on that idea for some time. The US Library of Congress holds many items belonging to them that relate to this part of the creative process. For example, Bernstein's copy of Romeo and Juliet, with his handwritten notes all through it, is at the US Library of Congress. In the synopsis of scenes at the front of the book, Bernstein wrote, "Opening scene, Mulberry Street Festival, Easter." Elsewhere, he wrote, "Song on Racism should be called It's the Jews, an out-and-out plea for racial tolerance, and the prologue should be interrupted by Street Fight," is another one of his quotes along the spine. There is also an early scene breakdown at the Library of Congress typed by Jerome Robbins. At this stage, all the names are still from the Shakespeare, Romeo, Tybalt, Mercutio, etc. The collection also has audition notes in Bernstein's handwriting and many photos from the rehearsal period and original production. I urge you to go onto Google, look up Library of Congress West Side Story. It is fascinating. There is so much there, but I didn't want to read it all out to you. You'll have a wonderful time, particularly if you are enjoying the rainy weather we're having this weekend. But by the time this goes out, it might be fine. By 1950, the team had decided to bring action right up to the present. The Jewish/Catholic divide was no longer a burning social issue. Street gangs and the new wave of migration were hot-button topics. One of the original cast members, who lived on West 80th Street, remarked that he had to negotiate his way to the theatre through real-life rumbles on 84th Street. And there's even famous thing, the rumbles of 84th Street, lots of newspaper coverage at the time. Once they made the decision to change it to gang wars between Puerto Rican and white first-generation American gangs, Bernstein remarked, "Suddenly it all springs to life. I can hear the rhythms and pulses and, most of all, I can feel the form."
As you're describing it, I can really feel the energy and the rumbling.
Excellent. West Side Story pushed boundaries in many ways. Firstly, by creating an unhinged, gritty atmosphere, not only for the audience, but during the rehearsal process. Jerome Robbins intentionally segregated the white and Latinx performers in order to create an atmosphere of distrust and an us versus them mentality. He would even pin newspaper articles on the notice board with "This is your life" written on them. And Arthur Lawrence also was a very despotic director, and not just in West Side Story, but many, many Broadway people regale stories of the way that he would tear people down in order to bring them up. And that is not the way to do it, people. The next way that boundaries were pushed was the use, or rather non-use, of foul language. "Hey, Officer Krupke, crap you," and "brass ass" were truly shocking to the 1950s audience. For the team, it was their love of musical theatre and a belief that such serious topics, such as death, attempted rape and murder, could be part of a musical. Arthur Lawrence said, "The subject matter, bigotry and violence and prejudice, and that people would pay money to see that with an orchestra." Carol Lawrence, who was the original Maria, remembered the curtain call on the opening night in Washington, D.C. When the curtain went up, they had just seen Tony's body to the strains of Somewhere and just a bell tolling. We held hands and they just looked at us and we looked at them. And I thought, oh, dear Lord, it's a bomb. And then they leapt to their feet, stamping and yelling. Lenny had made his way to the stage, put his arms around me, and we wept.
Oh.
What a moment.
I'm having a moment now. It really is symbolic.
There is so much more to the history of this show, and I don't want to make anybody switch off because we've got so much more interesting stuff to cover.
Oh, crap you.
So that's where I'm going to end my history.
Don't forget, Jane, coming up, we have trivia.
Trivia?
Trivia.
Trivia?
Trivia, a special crap you edition.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Jane.
Have you been working on a synopsis for us?
I have.
Would you like to lay it on us?
Here we go, listeners. West Side Story, the synopsis. Act 1. Rival street gangs, the Jets and the Sharks, try to capture control of the neighbourhoods in the Upper West Side of New York City. Officer Krupke and Lieutenant Trank send a warning to the two gangs in person. Stop the fighting. Riff, leader of the Jets, suggests a fight between the Sharks and puts the challenge to Bernardo, leader of the Sharks, at the neighbourhood dance. While doing this, Riff is also trying to sway Tony, a former member of the Jets, to meet Riff and the Jets at the dance. Loyalties are questioned, but Riff reassures Jet members that Tony is a Jet and will always be a Jet. Tony holds a decent job at Doc's drugstore and convinces Riff to meet him there. Riff wins Tony over, but Tony is adamant that an important something is around the corner. Maria is employed in a bridal shop alongside Anita, girlfriend of Maria's brother Bernardo. Arriving from Puerto Rico, an arranged marriage to Chino, a friend of Bernardo, is in store for Maria. Maria pours her heart out to Anita and tells her truthfully that she is not in love with Chino. Anita makes a dress for Maria to wear at the neighbourhood dance. It's dance time. Introductions are made and the teenagers' dance is in full swing. Suddenly, a dance-off is called as Tony and Maria see each other for the first time. Eyes locked and there's an instant connection. An enraged Bernardo pulls Maria away from Tony, sending Maria home. Tensions rise as a war council meeting between Riff and Bernardo is agreed to at Doc's drugstore. As the store is considered neutral ground. Tony, meanwhile, is happy and hooked on Maria, stalking and finding Maria's building singing Maria. Copyright.
Except that's a good example of something I'm going to talk about later.
Yes, we can. The lovebirds confirm their love on a fire escape. So much heat and no fire. Meanwhile, Anita and the Shark Girls debate territory differences of Puerto Rico and the United States of America. Anita is all American. Rosalita is Puerto Rican through and through. The Jets get itchy feet awaiting the Sharks at Dog's drugstore. Riff leads the Jets to let off steam. The Sharks then arrive as the choice of weapons is discussed for the rumble. Tony is adamant and they all fight like gentlemen. Fists only and a fair fight. Both leaders agree as the protests get louder and louder from all gang members. Bernardo is adamant he's fighting Tony and must seek vengeance for fighting Riff's second-in-command, Diesel. Lieutenant Trank efforts to find a location for the rumble are futile, while Tony confesses to Doc about Maria, but Doc is worried for their newfound love. Tony is steadfast in love and maintains his beliefs nothing can go wrong. The next day. Maria is at work in the bridal shop, eagerly waiting to see Tony, as she learns about the rumble from Anita. Here comes Tony, and Maria pleads with Tony to stop the fight. Everyone awaits in anticipation for the events to come later, but later comes too fast as the Jets and the Sharks meet under the highway bridge. The fight begins. Diesel and Bernardo exchange blows. Tony sees this and tries to stop it to make peace. Bernardo taunts and provokes Tony, but Tony is cool, calm, and unswayed. Bernardo pushes Tony. Riff punches Bernardo to defend Tony. Knives come out as Tony tries to fight fair, as Riff is stabbed by Bernardo. Tony kills Bernardo for revenge in an all-out fight. Police sirens are heard, and all gang members escape except Tony. Stunned by what he did, a tomboy who really wants to be a Jet tells Tony to go and take the knife with him. The bodies of Riff and Bernardo are left on the fighting ground.
It blows my mind, and particularly when you think what the rest of that landscape was on Broadway at that time. Happier. Everything was so happy and joyful. I mean, there are dark bits in Carousel, even Oklahoma. Very confronting for the audience. And that really raw physicality of the choreography, where I'm sure it would have felt like they could come and slit your throat in the audience because they were just so strong and really literally in your face.
We don't suggest anyone do that in musical theatre, to go and slit the throats of audience members.
No, it's a fabulous idea for a murder mystery. It's been used in Midsummer Murders and in a not very good novella I once read about putting on Sweeney Todd and using a real knife. But that was at least cast members, not audience members, in those issues.
Yes, that's right. And the cast members' bodies were turned into meat for pies.
No.
I'm sure we'll cover that in another podcast.
Well, in the Sweeney Todd podcast coming soon with an incredibly special guest.
Yes,
we've got lots of exciting guests coming up. Not to say that our local guests that we have had also this year.
Our local and past guests have been absolutely wonderful and fantastic. We love them to bits.
And it doesn't matter whether this is your love and you are also just an English teacher, or you are Nancy Hayes, OAAM XYZ.
Or you have an interest in a particular musical that you love?
Yes, well, like Lucy, who is just Ragtime's biggest fan in the entire world, from my point of view. And I don't know which other shows she's mad about. We might have her back next year for another show that she's mad about, but her love of Ragtime was legend. Give it a listen if you haven't already.
This is a trigger warning. This show is not a happy musical. It is about major social issues that affected New York and still affect the whole of the world, even today. And that will include unlawful killing and attempted sexual assault. Now, we don't spend a long time talking about any of these issues, but if that is too much for you, you don't need to listen to the episode, or you could fast forward to the Dreamcast and the trivia tidbits. We don't want anyone to ever feel uncomfortable listening to our program.
In Australia, you can contact Lifeline, or around the world, there are many support services that can help you in these areas.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Jane.
Would you like to tell us the synopsis of part the second?
I'm glad you asked, Jane. Act two. We see Maria unaware of what happened in the Rumble that night. Daydreaming with her mates, talking about Tony and blissfully happy, Maria goes to the top of her building's roof to dance in the knowledge Tony will stop the Rumble. Sharks member Chino tells Maria that Tony killed Bonanno. She flees to the sanctuary of her room and prays that it's not a lie. Tony comes over as Maria still loves him, but pounds his chest in rage. Only one option now, to run away together with pipe dreams of peace. Baby John and Arab, two members of the Jets, are met by Officer Krupke after escaping from the rest of the Jets. For entertainment, the rest of the Jets lampoon Officer Krupke. Tomboy comes to tell the Jets she's been spying on the Sharks and Chino has a gun with Tony's name on it. Jets members spread out to find Tony. As a reward, Tomboy joins the Jets to look for Tony. A grieving Anita goes to Maria's apartment. Tony leaves and tells Maria to meet him at Doc's to escape to the country. Anita sees Tony and Maria together and unleashes anger towards Tony. Maria tells Anita about the power of her love for Tony. Anita confesses about the gun Chino has coming for Tony. Lieutenant Schrank comes to question Maria about her brother's death. Anita then goes to Doc's drugstore to tell Tony to wait. Jets find Tony at Doc's as Anita arrives to racist and sexual taunts towards her. Doc stops them, but a furious Anita delivers the wrong message in spite, telling Tony and the Jets that Chino shot Maria stone-cold dead. Tony dreams of the country life and raise a family with Maria evaporate and feels that life is not worth living and leaves to find Chino. Tony then sees Maria. Chino arrives and Chino completes what he has set out to do. Jets and Shark members, everyone gathered to see Maria hold Tony one last time. Tony is dead. The Jets now move forward with the Sharks as Maria takes Chino's gun, telling everyone, "People have died because of the hate for each other. I hate hate and now I've got a job to do." Maria doesn't have the courage to follow through. She drops the gun. The war is over. The Jets and Sharks gather Tony's body, form a procession to carry Tony away as Maria takes her place, the last person in the procession. End of musical.
Whoa.
I told you it was too much.
Well, it's not too much because it is artfully created to affect this emotional response from us. But we can still manage to go home and live our normal lives.
After reading that, I've got such a lump in my throat.
Mm.
Wow, imagine how audience members felt after seeing it for the first time.
Oh, honestly, minds must have been blown. And those original people might not have actually emerged onto the city streets feeling like they could go and have a cocktail. They might have been a bit shell-shocked.
Do you reckon West Side Story was written to stop the violence?
Or at least give people an understanding of what was going on right next door? Because the Broadway audience would have been people from the Upper East Side. because the Upper West Side wasn't fancy then,
mm.
who easily could have put their blinders on and just not even noticed what was going on down in the West 80s. I think it might have been part of their thinking that they needed to get this message out to people.
Well, I must say, well done to Stephen Sondheim and Bernstein and Jerome Robbins for bringing that message across. It's an important message.
I think I missed a page. I have actually lost a page from my notepad because I remember that I did mention Stephen Sondheim somewhere, and I know it. I haven't said his name yet today, so thank you for bringing him up. Yes, Stephen Sondheim was the lyricist. He came on board last of all, well into it becoming West Side Story and the plot as we know it. He wasn't there for the very beginning, because at the very beginning he was probably still in school. He was very young when he was working on this.
And what was Sondheim's major influences, Jane?
Well, his godfather was Oscar Hammerstein II, as in Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Wow.
Mm. So he was the lyricist of the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals. He also started off in Showboat, which many argue, and I'm one of them, was the first American musical. It was the first book musical that really told the story through the songs. But other shows, and many, many shows after 1927, when Showboat came out, that were just any old plot of boy meets girl, parents don't like boy, he does something redeeming and it's all over, with some great poppy tunes. And Showboat propelled the action through the music and also was a massive cry to the public about racism.
Do you think West Side Story was the start of the Sondheim revolution in musical theatre?
I don't. I think that came a few years later because he worked on West Side Story, then he worked on Gypsy, but Gypsy is still really a Julie Stein musical. We will pose that question to the guest for Sweeney Todd, who really is a Sondheim expert. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Jane.
Is it time for...
Trivia.
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 Trivia, the Crop You edition.
Crop You.
Crop You, Jane.
Nice.
Lyricist Stephen Sondheim originally intended for G. Officer Kropke to say F.U. but changed it to Kropke over concerns regarding the soundtrack release. West Side Story was going to be the first Broadway production to use the F word. Choreographer Jerome Robbins insisted on an 8-week dance rehearsal period, double the standard time for Broadway, to accommodate the heavy dancing.
Good grief.
When shooting the film, Robbins pushes actors to extremes. In the cool scene, the dancers were dancing so hard that the dancers burned through their knee pads and over 200 pairs of shoes by the end of filming.
Whoa.
Talk about hot shoe shuffle.
Indeed.
Them feet was hot.
Too right. I didn't remember that he directed the Broadway production and the film. No wonder it is so sacrosanct in a lot of people's minds that you have to dance in your amateur production exactly like the film, because that is the original way. Also, I just remembered, it's in the copyright, you have to do the choreography, if for professionals anyway, that is the original 1957 choreography.
In the 1961 film of West Side Story, the dresses worn by Anita, Rita Moreno, and Maria, Natalie Wood, during the dance scene, cost around $4,000, making those dresses some of the most expensive dresses for a movie at that time.
$4,000. What would that be in today's money?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I'm not going to look it up, people. You can Google that yourself.
And there are lots of sports clubs called the Sharks and the Jets.
Undoubtedly.
So I want to let you know what I've found those clubs that are called the Sharks and the Jets. You'd be instantly surprised. Okay. So in rugby league competitions here in Australia, we have the Nowra Bombardieri Jets versus the Shell Harbour Sharks.
Yes, that makes sense.
In the National Rugby League, we had the Newtown Jets versus the Cronulla Sutherland Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
In America, in the National Hockey League, we had the Winnipeg Jets versus the San Jose Sharks.
Right.
In the New Zealand National Basketball League, we had the Southland Sharks versus the Manawatu Jets.
Oh.
So North Island versus South Island.
All right.
Closer to home in the Adelaide Footy League, we had the Unley Mercedes Jets versus the Henley Sharks.
Rightio.
But there are some teams called Jets and some teams called Sharks that don't play each other or aren't in the actual leagues at all. So, for instance, in the National Football League in America, there are the New York Jets.
Indeed.
In the Australian A-League Football League, we had the Newcastle Jets.
Oh, I would have thought they'd have Sharks because they're by the water.
Exactly, but no. In baseball in America, there's the Wilmington Sharks. In the German Ice Hockey League, there are the Cologne Sharks.
Sharks?
Yes, in Sharks Cologne. In Cologne.
Nowhere near any sea I can think of.
In rugby union in America, there are the Miami Sharks. And that makes sense.
Yes. I'm still stuck on Cologne.
But the one that I don't get is in the British Basketball Super League, the Sheffield Sharks.
Apart from the alliteration of Sheffield Sharks, I can't see what Sharks have to do with Sheffield, City of Steel.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you for your... Oh.
And there's one more bit I forgot. In Lawn Bowls, here in Adelaide, the Salisbury Bowling Club is home to the Salisbury Jets.
So, as the silver-haired players approach the green, we hear... Dum, 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 dum.
And there endeth trivia.
No, it doesn't actually, Michael, because I've got an interesting thing.
Oh, yes, please add your trivia.
If you recall me saying that once they had decided it was going to be about Puerto Rican gang versus a first-generation gang, Bernstein said that it opened up the musical language of the musical for him. Now, he used a lot of Latin rhythms, including a Mexican dance called the huapanga. He also based the musical motif of the prologue, Something's Coming, Maria, and Call on the call of the shofar, which is the ancient Hebrew instrument, which is basically a hollowed-out ram's horn that you blow. It is still used today for religious ceremonies. Our people, we do welcome interaction via our email or the comments sections on the platform.
We'd love to hear from you.
This week, we'd like to hear from you with which other Broadway musical features the shofar?
I know. I'm not going to tell our listeners.
I might give our listeners a clue. We were in it.
I was in it especially and loved it.
You were in it especially. I was actually in front of it.
It's one of my favourite roles and I loved it.
And it's one of my favourite shows. Extra special points if you can tell me of a different musical from the one that we're thinking of, because there could well be another one, because there are some ancient Hebrew musicals.
Or you can tell us...
Musicals about ancient Hebrews, not ancient Hebrew musicals.
You can also send us an email with what other historical and ancient musical instruments are in musicals.
That'd be interesting.
It would be.
And I bet we've got at least one listener who has already got this in mind. Welcome to our West Side Story Dreamcasts.
Now, unfortunately, dear listener, we were unable to secure a guest for this podcast.
Our ideal participants were too busy making theatre, which is fair enough.
Bringing joy with their talents as they entertain their audiences.
Yes, or working hard behind the scenes before the next entertainment. Yeah. Michael and I will take turns. We'll say the character and then we'll each say our picks.
So here it is, listeners, the West Side Story Dreamcast from Jane and Michael. So Jane, who do you have as Maria?
Now, I'll just preface my selections with I am doing it as if it's a real production that might happen on Broadway in the next few years. So I'm taking into consideration the modern audience's lack of tolerance for people of the wrong cultural background portraying people of this cultural background in a show when actually race is important.
And I did mine in about 5 minutes.
You pick people who they just spoke to you like, this character goes with this actor.
They inspire me and I love what they bring to the table with their talents and their abilities to perform and entertain.
Very good. Maria, who did you go for?
Well, ladies first.
Oh, thank God. Mandy Gonzalez, who was in the original In the Heights on Broadway, and Wicked, or Rachel Zegler, who was Maria in the Spielberg movie in 2020 and most recently played Evita on the West End.
Interesting.
How about you?
Well, I've chosen two actresses, Nicole Kidman or Ginger Rogers.
Right, so we're time-travelling a bit there.
It wouldn't be Ginger Rogers. With our Dreamcast, we can have actors absolutely alive or have passed on into their new lives.
Or are now not the right age for the role, or, in sometimes, not yet old enough.
Who are here in spirit and are still dancing and performing on Broadway stages.
In heaven. Lovely. Tony, I tried to find somebody of note who was a good tenor who was Polish, because Tony is Polish. Without actually saying people from Poland's own theatre community, I have gone for Jonas Kaufmann, who is a German tenor. He has recorded Maria on many an album, and he's very good at accents. So he could be an American. Now, obviously, he is over 50, so this is, again, a time-travelling casting.
Well, I've chosen two actors.
Mm-hmm.
Ewan McGregor.
Oh, yeah.
And Fred Astaire.
Oh.
Well, it's been proven. Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman in Moulin Rouge. Fred and Ginger in any Fred and Ginger movie. They're just the perfect couple, and it's been proven.
I'm moving on to Riff. Riff is the leader of the Jets. Am I right?
Yes. He's a leader. Strong, yeah. Attentive, drives the whole musical.
I would argue Anita drives the musical, but we'll go. We'll
that could be later.
We will stick to our dream casting. So Riff, John Voight in Time Travel.
Interesting.
Who was Rolf in the original run of Sound of Music?
Really?
Yeah. He was 17 going 18. Or Norbert Leo Butz.
I love his name.
I know you love his name. A lot of us actually love his work. He has won Tonys at least twice. He was in Catch Me If You Can as the FBI man, the Tom Hanks character.
Yes.
And Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, he was Ruprecht, or that character who pretends to be Ruprecht, and won Tonys for those. So he is a well-renowned, a highly talented member of the Broadway community. He's again now aged out of the role of Riff, but we just wind the clock back and go, yes, he's brilliant. Who have you chosen for Riff?
Russell Crowe.
Oh, great. It's a non-singing role, isn't it?
It's a non-singing role, but he's impulsive. He's a leader.
Oh, he's very much got that aura about him. He's been cast in that driven leadership kind of role.
Bernardo.
I've gone for the same person Mr. Spielberg went for, David Alvarez. He was Bernardo in the film, and he was one of the original Broadway Billy Elliots. So we know he's got dance ability.
And?
Not knowing if he can dance, I do know he can sing. John Leguizamo, who was in Moulin Rouge, as to his trick. And I didn't know this till I was researching this. He was Bruno in Encanto. We do not talk about.
I love John in John Wick. He had a really good role, and I loved him in that.
Mm. He has sung in a few things. He's never actually been in a musical on stage, but he might be up for it.
Mm.
Yours, Bernardo's.
I've gone back in time, and I've gone for Esai Morales.
I know that
name. Have you heard of the actor before?
I do, but remind me.
He played Richie Valens' brother, Bob, in La Bamba, the movie.
Oh, okay.
And I've also gone for Jimmy Smits.
Oh, yes. In the day. Yeah. A very, very fine actor. And he has been, I think he might have been a Billy Flynn at some point. Write in and tell us.
Anita. Who have you gone for with Anita, Jane?
Well, I've gone for Cheetah Rivera because she was just exactly right. Now, one of the things on that Library of Congress website of all the handwritten notes is Bernstein's audition notes. And all kinds of interesting people. Jerry Orbach auditioned and Warren Beatty.
What did he say about Warren Beatty?
Warren Beatty, he said, pleasant voice, doesn't move his jaw, clean cut. Now, I assume he means he does not open his mouth enough to be able to get a good sound, which is required for Broadway singing. Jerry Orbach was fine, had fine voice. Everybody had something written after their name except for Gita Rivera. It just said Anita with a big underline under it. She is right for the role. Now, if we are casting it to be on now, I've picked Ariana DeBose, who was Spielberg's pick, or Anna Villafane. She is not a household name yet. She might be in Latin communities. I'm not entirely sure. She's just played Gloria Estefan in the Broadway musical On Your Feet, which is about the Estefans. So she can dance, she can sing, she can act. So if we were actually putting it on in the next couple of years, that's who I would go for.
I've gone for two actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Julia Roberts.
Right.
And Susan Sarandon. Strong, sassy, can push the envelope. Sarandon's character in the movie Bull Durham.
Oh, yeah.
I've gone for that with her sassiness and her character.
There's also
the
two
acting.
Other films where she plays a character similar. There's one where she's playing an Italian, but a very modern lady, like herself, and Susan Sarandon actually is an Italian-American.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Banger Sisters, which was a strange little comedy, but still got that oomph, that chutzpah that you need for Anita. And we know that she is no stranger to singing because she was in the original film of Rocky Horror. Julia Roberts, though, is on record as I will not sing or dance in public.
But her role in Erin Brockovich.
Oh, we know she could act the pants off it.
Yes.
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 All right. Who's next?
Chino.
Chino. Well, I didn't do a wide sweep of this one. I just thought Lin-Manuel.
Right. Interesting.
See, Chino is a very serious kind of a person. He needs to be able to emote beyond the footlights, but compared with a lot of the others, he's rather quiet. So that's what I've gone with there.
One actor that I had in mind for Chino, Gaetan Matarazzo.
Oh, yes.
Tony Sheldon's favourite actor.
Gaetan, to the people who only know him from Stranger Things, Gaetan started as a child on Broadway and has a lovely voice. He was, I cannot remember the first show he was in. Oh, that's the one with Tony. Priscilla.
Yes,
he was
exactly,
the boy
yes.
in Priscilla. And he also has been in Sweeney Todd as the character who sings Nothing's Gonna Harm You, Not While I'm Around. Toby, I think his name is. Please write in Rodney.
Where's Rodney when you need him?
Oh, he was happy to be here for this, but I said that he can only come on once a year.
Lieutenant Schrank.
I've gone for Liev Schreiber.
Interesting. Do tell. Go on.
See,
explain.
Schrank and Krupke are both very out-and-out prejudiced against this group of new immigrants. But they are only first-generation immigrants themselves, hence their names.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people think they represent the establishment, but they don't. They're representing that kind of bully culture that happens in situations like this, where to big yourself up, as the young folks used to say, they probably don't say it now, you put other people down in order to big yourself up. That is what they are. So I thought somebody of the correct cultural background who kind of can go under the radar, like Leo Schreiber, and may I say his offsider at the same time?
Yes.
Ike Barinholtz.
For Officer Krupke.
For Officer Krupke. Now, Ike Barinholtz, fabulous name. Again, hardly ever cast in Jewish role. He usually is regular bloke. You need to Google him. You'll see his picture. You go, oh, I remember him in this comedy. I remember him in that show. He's very general person looking, which is... Which is a great benefit when you're an actor because then you can play all kinds of roles. That
exactly. You can be moulded to any role.
Mm. Who did you pick for those two?
Well, for Lieutenant Schrank and Officer Krupke, I've chosen two actors that can interchange between the role.
Oh, right. Like
So one could be Officer Krupke and the other one could be Lieutenant Trank, and then the roles could be reversed.
Right, like that Frankenstein.
Yes, exactly. So for Lieutenant Trank, I've gone for Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, yeah.
And for Officer Krupke, I've gone for Tom Hanks.
And I can see how you can be
reversed.
Yes,
the roles can be reversed. But I really want to say crap you to Leslie Nielsen and Tom Hanks. I really want to say those words.
It'd be an interesting dynamic with the audience because some audiences cannot divorce their preconceived notions of an actor. So if somebody were to say crap you to Leslie Nielsen, it'd just get a laugh. But if they were to say it to Tom Hanks, there'd be a bit of a, ooh. All right, who have you got for Doc?
Nick Offerman.
Oh, yes, wise, yes. Middle-aged man, sensible. Yes,
and with his voice and accent can calm, be the voice of reason.
Yes, yeah. Okay.
Wearing the soda jerker's hat with the apron and the whole diner uniform and all that sort of stuff.
Very good. So I, as I said previously, cast it as if we were really doing it. Doc is a person who is a 60-ish age Jewish man. Who is wise? I have two to choose from. A time travel one and a current time.
Your first one.
Jerry Orbach.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Who auditioned for the original.
And he can sing.
Yes. As Bernstein wrote, fine baritone. And a non-baritone, a very high tenor, Mandy Patinkin.
Oh, yes.
Because he dispenses advice like a wise old man at the drop of a hat.
As we went to one of his masterclasses for the Adelaide Cabaret Festival.
As we discovered.
Jane, what is your choice for the role of anybody's?
Although it's such a small part and there are other parts that are slightly larger that we haven't touched on at all, it is a girl who wears trousers and shirts and runs with the gang, does not hang around with gang girl like Graziella and Rosalia.
Like a groupie.
She doesn't want to be a groupie. She wants to be in the gang. She wants to be part of what the boys are. So, with that in mind, I have cast Angela Cartwright, who was Brigitte in The Sound of Music. She was also in Lost in Space.
Yes.
Who did you pick for anybody's?
Well, I've gone back to a film in the 1990s.
Yeah.
Where she played
in
My Girl, Anna Chlumsky.
Oh, right. Yeah, she has that same kind of pep.
She is the perfect tomboy for West Side Story. End of discussion. Hands down. That's it.
No singing is required by anybody's, I believe.
No.
Anna Chlumsky might sing. I just don't. We also tend not to say tomboy in this day and age. It was a term used in the 50s to the 80s, probably earlier. These days, you could cast anybody's from anybody.
Exactly.
It's just a character who is out of the norm, who desires to be part of the game. And pushes themselves further into danger to prove that they could be part of the game. Anybody could be anybody.
Yes, exactly.
That is all in our Dreamcast. Do write in or write a comment if you've got anybody that you've been screaming at us going, what about?
Listeners, I'm about to open the door for the first time ever and Jane's going to reveal our next musical we're covering on another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast. Here we go.
The Pyjama Game! Yay! Yes!
And we have a guest.
I know who the guest is.
Well, why don't you tell us who our special guest is, Jane?
It is Mark Trevorrow.
Oh, I love Mark.
Now, a lot of people may not know that name, but they do know the name of one of his greatest creations.
Can I say the name?
Yes, say it.
Bob Down.
Bob Down.
I love Bob. His hair looks like a cricket helmet. I love it. It's like a cricket helmet from the 70s.
Now, we may refer to Bob. Now, English listeners also know Bob Down because he was in England for about a decade.
Exactly.
And
On TV.
And was great pals with Julian Clary and the late Paul O'Grady.
Mark was in a band called the Globos here in Australia. I love the Globos.
I remember seeing the Globos on Countdown early in the morning and I must have been quite small because I'm not as old as I sometimes say I am. Mark has an incredible musical pedigree.
we are privileged to know him through that comedy character, but we're going to be talking to the man, Mark Trevorrow. And his favourite musical of all time is The Pyjama Game.
So, Jane, what's Mark doing at the moment?
At the moment, he's been touring with the marvellous Bev Kennedy, the musical director, and his friend Rupert Knopfs.
Oh, I love Rupert. I've seen videos of him. He's got a wonderful singing voice.
They've got a marvellous chemistry together, and their show is called Old Friends. So obviously they sing that song by Sondheim, but they sing a wonderful array of musical theatre numbers and some pops rearranged by Bev for the two male voices together. It's just great.
They've got wonderful chemistry together, and they gel together, and they know each other inside and out.
It's a joy to watch. I've seen some of it on YouTube because, unfortunately, the powers that be and Cabaret in Adelaide have not extended that invitation for a couple of years. So hopefully we might get a groundswell of excitement, and that can be used to help convince them to book Old Friends for us to see in South Australia.
Now, our listeners, if you have any questions you want us to ask Mark, do send them in on our socials and on Facebook.
Try to keep them directed towards Pyjama Game.
Yes.
So, The Pyjama Game, great movie musical and great stage musical.
Yes, of course.
And not done nearly enough anymore in the community theatre landscape.
Brush up your Shakespeare, Jane.
What's that got to do with anything?
That's in The Pyjama Game.
That's from Kiss Me, Kate.
Oh, damn it.
The Pyjama Game is about, funnily enough, pyjamas, not Shakespeare.
Really? I love pyjamas. I'm sure our listeners love pyjamas as well.
You need to go back into your pyjamas and go back to bed.
I do. I really, really do. And on that note, we shall end our podcast of West Side Story.
Thank you for listening to another opening, another show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Which you can stream on YouTube, Spotify and Castbox, and get involved with us at our email address, aoas2025@hotmail.com. That's aoas2025@hotmail.com.
Tell us where you're listening from. We'll give you a shout out on the podcast.
And if you've got anything you'd like to say about anything we've done thus far, or you've got some interesting tidbits about Pyjama Game, drop us a line. Thank you for listening to another opening, another show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Here on Kaurna Land in South Australia.
In a very cold Gawler. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.